Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is David Howard King, state government editor at the Gotham Gazette since 2009. Welcome, David.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
Hey, David, let's start by asking you a little bit about the Gotham Gazette. What is it?
We're a nonprofit media organization that's been published online since 1999. We're funded through a lot of grants, and we're the sister organization of Citizens Union, a good government group out of New York. We've been doing aggregation since before it was cool, and now that it's not cool, we've been doing a lot more independent reporting and investigative journalism.
For those who are listening who are not in touch with this, aggregation is when somebody sets up a website and steals from everybody else, right? And
yes,
puts their stuff down, yeah. And there are now a lot of aggregators, but very few people who are doing really good on-the-ground journalism. So I take it you guys are doing that.
I'd like to think so. I mean, we're focused on the impacts of state government and city government on the lives of people in New York City. But our work obviously expands very much to New York State and, you know, how government really impacts folks' lives, whether it be through corruption or actually getting things done.
Well, maybe, David, you can set me straight on something that I just don't understand. As you know, I had a program with Mario Cuomo for maybe 18 years. I wrote a book about him. I've known Andrew Cuomo for a long, long time. I don't understand something. I don't understand what the hell is going on between him and Bill de Blasio. It's almost as if they're in a mutually destructive cycle, but I have to say I think Andrew's probably more the progenitor than poor de Blasio is, who comes off as looking as, you know, just sort of like, what happened here?
Well, I have to say my interest in journalism actually sprung from listening to your interviews with Mario and donating to get tapes of Mario's speeches as a kid. So that out of the way, I have to say that I think a lot of people are wondering what's going on with these two. But as time wears on, it does appear that Governor Cuomo is taking the regular route that he takes with, you know, powerful Democrats, anyone with power in the state. He's looking to position them in the weakest place possible and then strike to enhance his own political capital. And I think what we've seen here is he's let Mayor de Blasio sort of run himself out by helping him trip himself up every chance he gets. And then he's moved in to take his bigger issues now, like with the minimum wage and even some social justice reforms that de Blasio had originally been pushing.
Okay, so I've just written a column about this, actually, and it's fascinating to me that we see Andrew Cuomo repositioning himself as we speak. He was a conservative. I think he has two fathers, the real father, Mario, the liberal, and the sort of conservative, more conservative Bill Clinton. And he tried to marry the two of them when he married them to each other philosophically when he became governor. Now, all of a sudden, we're seeing a more liberal Andrew emerge. But I'm wondering about that. What's that about?
Well, we've come off a year where he had a very rough time in the legislature. He's fighting on two fronts against his own party that is tired of being mistreated and seeing their initiatives go down in flames despite their best efforts.
Like what, for example, David?
Well, obviously, minimum wage has been one of them, where, you know, the governor did give them a piece of what they wanted, and of course they'd like a larger raise.
The piece being $15 for fast food workers.
That and the previous minimum wage increase to $10 an hour, which has yet to completely phase in. Obviously, same-sex marriage was a huge win for progressives, but fiscally, obviously, he's gutted unions, he's gone after education that Democrats are typically very fond of, and what they want, you know, are the social justice reforms that he basically ran on, the DREAM Act, the gender legislation for gender equality, all things that he touted in his run and then wasn't able to accomplish. Now, people can say he was beaten up in the election and that's why he didn't have the political capital to push on Senate Republicans, but everyone in the know doesn't believe that Cuomo actually went to bat during negotiations. And, you know, obviously the other two big things for folks in the city are rent regulations and mayoral control schools, which Andrew clearly did not push for in a way that anyone was satisfied with.
So let's take those rent control or rent stabilization, as we call it. I suspect that people in New York City don't know squat about state government. government, really. They don't care about it until it is about their apartments and whether they're going to have to lose their apartments. And who gave all the money to the Andrew campaign? Well, not all of it, a lot of it, the real estate industry. Now, he goes to bat, right, David, and he fights for keeping the rent controls that are on the apartments in New York. Parse that one for me.
Well, you know, I've seen some studies that say this is the worst and weakest rent control enhancement since the Patakian administration, or worse. And, you know, these interests are saying if you don't strengthen rent control, we are going to lose thousands of apartments and no one's going to be able to afford to live in New York City unless they are hedge fund millionaires.
But it's those landlords and the real estate industry which have given him all the money that's in his, coffers.
There are a number of folks who would say that Andrew's real father is, are hedge funds and real estate interests, and Leonard Litwin, who was his largest donor. He's the largest state donor, but he also gave Andrew at least $1 million, and the governor denied remembering meeting with him when he was questioned about it, and then quickly his staff reminded him that he had met with him. And Leonard Litwin, for everyone, is this big real estate developer who is tied into the investigations of Dean Skelos and Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver.
So, as we say, the trifecta.
Yes.
He gave to all three, right?
To be fair, he gave to just about everyone in the state. It's harder to find someone he didn't give to than someone that he.
I didn't see him in the public radio roles here at WAMC. However, I want to just pursue what Andrew is doing. Now, all of a sudden, we're hearing less from the governor than we did for a while. He stands up with Joe Biden, and Biden says this is one of the best governors in the United States. He's playing games in terms of Hillary versus Biden, but he's being very quiet. He is not, with the exception of this unbelievable fight with de Blasio, he's being more gubernatorial. Would you agree with that?
I do. I think he got himself into the weeds a lot during the last session, and he failed to deliver on big initiatives, and then suddenly, I think a lot of legislators were confused that he flitted between his raise the age proposal to the education tax credit and a number of other initiatives that suddenly became very important, and then he pushed and pushed for, and then wasn't able to get some of them. And instead of focusing on the things that he actually proposed in his State of the State speech and seemed to really go to bat for, I will say, a lot of experts say to me, well, he doesn't have any other enemies at this point. He doesn't have a challenge. He doesn't have the Senate Republicans pushing back. He doesn't have Senate Democrats pushing his agenda. And right now is a time for him to shine and at least pretend to be a player on the national stage. Of course, some people suggest that he is positioning himself for a run, or at least, for the vice presidency with Joe Biden. And I think that's a long shot after a lot of the damage that he's done to himself through Moreland and other initiatives that haven't quite gone over so well.
You mentioned Moreland. Of course, you're speaking of the Moreland Ag Commission, and you're speaking of the fact that he established it so that it would clearly go and investigate the legislature. He got the attorney general in on it with him. And then, almost inexplicably, he canceled it out. And we think, again, we were referring to the real estate industry before, that the Moreland people were beginning to smell the real estate industry, and that's, according to Ken Lovett of the Daily News and to a wonderful piece in the New York Times, he was calling in plays for who to investigate and who not to. That's the governor was calling in those plays. And you think that hurt him?
Well, unfortunately, the public does not pay attention to corruption as much as it should in ethics and campaign financing. However, I think it was very simple for folks to see the governor promised one thing, and as soon as it looked like it might be getting close, made sure to shut it down and tried to do so as quietly as possible.
Well, couldn't he have seen that coming? They asked him when he first established it, what if they come after you? What if they let them go anywhere they want? They're totally independent. Then they weren't.
He has a habit of contradicting himself, whether it's on policy or on ethics. And, I think perhaps he thought no one would dare to actually behind the scenes dig into things that could touch him, whether they were seriously problems or whether there are real conflicts there or if it just, looked bad. However, I've spoken to a number of former Moreland appointees, and they were extremely frustrated, and they felt, one appointee said to me, it was like we lined up the search dogs and we got them right to the point where they were, going to make the arrest, and he pulled them back. He sort of let it slip right out from under us, and we all felt like fools.
You wrote a piece in the Gotham Gazette, and if somebody wants to see the Gotham Gazette, is it GothamGazette.com?
Yes, sir.
And you wrote a piece about how Bill de Blasio coming up against Cuomo helped him get his, quote, the governor, get his groove back. What was that about?
Well, the idea is that the mayor lined up behind all these interests. He finally found a way to make Cuomo promise to deliver on them through the Working Families Party last summer when Cuomo needed their endorsement and didn't want a third-party challenge. And Cuomo promised a number of things live on video camera in front of a very hostile crowd. And as soon as he got the endorsement, it looked like he ran straight away from all those promises. Now, de Blasio, when he denounced Cuomo in many different ways, it seemed to many that he was saying, hey, look, I tried my best in Albany, and I realize now that I need the governor to get them done. And de Blasio has been accused of being criticized for being an ideas man, for really believing, you know, whether you should be criticized or not, but, you know, that he really focuses on these things that he cares about. And sometimes the politics aren't all sorted out before he goes out there on a limb. So here he is dangling, waiting for Andrew, who he's known for years, to help him out. And rather than helping him out, Cuomo pushes him off it. And now he's allowed to move in and swoop in on these issues that happen to be very popular with New York voters across the state. Minimum wage is not just a New York City issue. It's something that polls very well across the entire state.
Yeah. So let me talk to you about Jeff Klein. He's one of the most interesting guys. There's a group of four, maybe five people who, all white, by the way, who have been playing the Republicans off against the Democrats and have basically delivered to the Republicans a majority, even albeit by just a few votes or one vote in the Senate. Tell us a little about Jeff Klein. I mean, here's a Democrat from the Bronx. What's that about?
Well, I should say that they're no longer needed because Republicans do have numerical control.
Right.
So his influence has dwindled. But yeah, he is a guy who is known to be very ambitious, to say the least. He became very unhappy during the 2009 Senate coup when the infamous Pedro Espada took control and leveraged his votes with Republicans. And Jeff wanted to be the leader of the Senate Democrats. And things got so bitter that there really wasn't any room to negotiate with him. And he eventually broke off and, in a way, people say, did his own version of Pedro Espada. Of course, they don't take that very kindly. But he, to the Bronx, is very close to what Joe Bruno was to the Capital Region in Troy. And as a result, you know, he's built up this sort of fiefdom in the Bronx that allows him to control a lot of the very small, you know, minutiae of his district.
So will he ever get his? In other words, there's a sense that the regulars, I talk to them too, of course, they hate him.
Yes.
Regular Democrats.
I cannot tell you, it's hard to convey how much venom there is from Senate Democrats to Jeff Klein and vice versa. I will say that they don't think he has anywhere room to go anywhere at this point. He has no higher office they think is particularly obvious to him. AG seems to be tied up. I don't think he can run for governor at any point, although some people have said to me he would be a good sequel to Governor Cuomo because he's a tough guy who likes to put himself in the middle of the road, in the middle of things, and leverage power. But, you know, at the same time, no one sees him really going back to the Democrats because he's a very prideful man, as my recent story sort of paints the picture.
But he started his own newspaper. What's that about?
Yeah, he's had a notoriously rough relationship with the press across the state, whether it be in Albany or the Bronx. But, you know, he found that he didn't like some of the columns from some of the articles, even one connecting him to Leonard Littman, which, as I said, isn't exactly uncommon. Most politicians have taken money from Leonard Littman. However, he went after some of these papers and wanted them to stop writing stories and put pressure on the editorial board. And when that didn't work, he started a newsletter that very much appears to be the newspaper that he was most upset with. And a lot of journalists.
Which one was that? I'm sorry. The Bronx?
The Riverdale Press.
Press, yeah, which has got a very good reputation.
It's a great paper. They do some very good work. Mm-hmm. But, you know, talking to them, they've been harassed. They've been threatened in a number of different ways. And there are smaller publications with reporters who report the same thing or even worse. And they're just trying to tell the story of their community. And this very powerful senator, who some of them are very afraid of because he wields the kind of influence Joe Bruno used to, is telling them, you know, you could lose your job if you keep doing this, if you keep asking serious questions.
Preet Bharara, of course, the fighting U.S. attorney, has now indicted the head of the Senate, the head of the Assembly, and Dean Skelos in the Senate case, Sheldon Silver in the Assembly case. I'm fascinated by this because I keep looking for hints as to whether or not he'll get convictions. If he doesn't get convictions, in other words, if they Joe Bruno was exonerated, it took him a long, long time, but he was found not guilty. What will that do to the way to all his hard work in trying to reform Albany, to Preet Bharara's work?
It's interesting because we've seen that good government groups and a lot of other folks who are working for reforms have backed off because they feel Governor Cuomo didn't deliver for them, and they're waiting to see what the U.S. attorney can deliver for them. If those convictions don't come together, I think a lot of people are going to be lost. They're going to be looking for a miracle, who can actually come into Albany and get things done to change the culture. I was speaking to an insider who was convinced that Sheldon Silver is going to be a very hard conviction. It's unlikely that people are going to hear stories about his donations for cancer research and feel that that work wasn't exactly for the public good, despite the fact that there were kickbacks and other things involved in it.
Well, it takes one juror.
That's true, yeah.
And Dean Skelos trying to get stuff for his son?
Yeah, the argument there so far from the defense seems to be, well, that's the culture in Albany. And, you know, one of the greatest problems that Albany has is the public officer's law is so loosely interpreted. And
you know why? Because they wrote it.
Exactly. They wrote it, and they're going to keep writing it. I think Dean Skelos is also a hard conviction, except that Bharara does not seem to be relenting. He's adding more charges. He keeps adding different things. And, of course, the word around town is he's looking for them to flip and hand him bigger fish.
Is it possible that either of those guys, if exonerated, could go back to their old jobs?
Well, it sounds like Sheldon Silver is facing a challenge, and it's likely that Skelos is going to face a challenge as well.
A primary challenge in the district, yeah.
Should they survive that? Yeah, it's possible. However, I sincerely doubt either of them can regain control, although Republicans have been a bit more defiant, and, they kept Senator Tom Libous, who was indicted and then convicted, pretty close to them all through the events, and some people would have really liked to keep Dean Skelos as leader. So not that he'll probably return to power, but he still may be of some influence.
So does the governor run again?
Well, these actions this summer sort of point to the idea that he's trying to repair some of the damage he made, he sort of did to his relationship with Democrats. He appears to have pulled Eric Schneiderman, the AG, closer to him than normal, especially.
Yeah, he was after him in the beginning.
Yes, sir. And, it's not like relationships have suddenly been repaired, but it does look like he's doing a lot of work that you would want to do before running again. And, there are some people say that there's absolutely no chance and that he's burnt out and he has so many things going on that perhaps he would rather not. But if he does have national ambitions and it does sound like he's very concerned with his legacy, that perhaps there is some more wants to get done. However, as you well know, as the son of Mario Cuomo, he is particularly sensitive to the third term and, doesn't want to get swept away in a third term and an embarrassing loss. And I think a lot of his politics was informed by seeing his father lose and perhaps the electorate sour on this strong message that he stuck to. And Andrew has become very nimble in what he believes and what he stands for to avoid that sort of fate.
I think that's absolutely right. So is there any way, and you've been writing about this and examining this, and you're a very good writer, very insightful. Is there any way things will ever change around here? In other words, I've watched for so many years thinking that somebody would say, okay, let's do some real reforming of this legislature, and we'll put up a statue to us outside for having done it. But there seems to be no appetite for it.
People will laugh. Insiders will laugh when I say this, but there is hope. Some have a long shot hope that the Constitutional Convention, which voters will have to decide whether to hold coming up, could have the impact and really the revolutionary impact that we need to actually change the culture in Albany. However, voters have rejected the opportunity to elect delegates to go to this meeting and sort of rework the state constitution in the last a few times it's happened, and it occurs every 10 years that this opportunity comes along.
Well, I fight with my very dear friend, Jerry Benjamin, about this a good deal, Professor Benjamin, who is the guy on the Constitutional Convention and a wonderful man. And I fight with him all the time because I know, and you know, and so does everybody else, that if it were just us voters who, I actually live in Massachusetts, but if it was just the voters who established this, it might work. But what happens is the same old people who are running the legislature and running the Bronx and running everything else will grab a hold of it, and it won't be thinking outside the box. It'll be inside the box.
If things occur as they're currently slated, that is exactly what will happen. I think no one disputes that, but there is an effort brewing to change the system so that people who are not politicians or the appointees of politicians get
Still, David, they can still find their brother-in-law, Louis,
or they can
find somebody else who'll do it. They said the last time that we had one of these that you couldn't run yourself. So it looked like the legislature was meeting as the Constitutional Convention. So they said, okay, we're not going to do that anymore. But, of course, they did. And everybody, they control who's going to sit in those seats.
Yeah, it's self-preservation. And we've seen it through Moreland, and we've seen it in quite a few other places. There's very little incentive for these people to say, sure, we'll give you all our power and what we fought for years to establish. We also saw it with redistricting, where there were
certainly did
so many pledges to redo the process by which districts are drawn. And instead of any real change, we saw a 63rd Senate district drawn that cut the Albany, you know, one of the Albany County districts of Senator Neil Breslin nearly in half. And suddenly it allowed it was designed to allow a Senate Republican to win it. But of course, a Democrat won it. But now the Senate Republican has control of it. And, you know, it wasn't pretty. The governor had pledged to change the system. And at the last minute, he backtracked and got on board with this compromise that allowed Senate Republicans to change that. And of course, it won't be years until that system until redistricting occurs again, and so we're stuck with those districts.
We got 1 minute. The presidential election's coming up. The Democrats come out in presidential elections. New York is a blue state. Any chance that the Senate will go heavily Democratic as a result of this?
Democrats have a lot of hope. They think that's a possibility, and there are a lot of Republicans who are getting older and have little interest in holding their seats just to hold them.
Put another way, God has term limits.
Yes. Mm-hmm. However, my friend Bill Mahoney from Politico New York likes to tell me that, you know, a lot of these districts that are vulnerable, the voters are just Republican because of the way they're designed. And
you bet.
You'd have to insert Democrats to switch them.
Well, we're out of time. Our guest has been the remarkable David Howard King, state government editor at the Gotham Gazette. That's GothamGazetteOneWord.com.
Yes, sir.
Thanks so much for joining us, David. Hope you'll come back again. We always enjoy talking to you.
Thanks for having me.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.